Hello, and welcome to this Open Systems Media webinar on how to minimize cost and risk for developing safety certifiable systems. I'm Mike Demler, Editorial Director for Open Systems Media's online publication, dsp-fpga.com. I will be serving as the moderator for this webinar. I'd like to begin with an introduction to our topic. Designing modern avionics systems for manned as well as unmanned aircraft presents challenges in the integration of safety-critical components, including processors, operating systems, communications media, and application software. Requirements for safety certification criteria of airborne systems and equipment makes designing for these systems even more demanding. In this webinar, you will learn how the use of one common integration platform in your designs can lower development and certification costs and reduce overall project risk. Our presenter will discuss testability of distributed systems, how to avoid sources of non-determinism, design alternatives for reliable communication, and more. But before we get started, I just have a few housekeeping items. Today's presentation will consume about 50 minutes, leaving us 10 minutes or so for questions at the end. There are several on-screen buttons that I'd like you to take notice of. First, by clicking on the Enlarge Slides button, you will be able to view the slides in full screen mode. You will also find a button on your screen that allows you to download a copy of the slides. There is a Forward to a Friend button that you can use to send an email to a colleague to invite them to join us for this live event. Finally, you will also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter your questions in real time. We'll do our best to address your questions during our closing Q&A session. If you have a question pertaining to the webcast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the presentation. We may not get to all of your questions before the end of our allotted time, but in that case, someone will get back to you after the webcast with more information. Finally, this webcast will be posted online shortly after the event, and an audio podcast will also be made available. We'll have more details about that at the end. So on to the presentation. Our speaker today is Dr. Edwin DeYoung, Director of Product Management and Strategy for Core Products at Real Time Innovations Incorporated. Dr. DeYoung has more than 15 years of experience in the architecture and design of large-scale distributed real-time systems. These systems encompass C4I, radar, track management, multi-sensor data fusion, threat evaluation, weapon and sensor assignment, and simulation and training. Over to you, Edwin.
Thank you for the introduction, Mike, and hi, everyone. Welcome to our webinar today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Edwin DeYoung, and I'm responsible for product strategy here at RTI. In case you're not familiar with RTI is an infrastructure software company. We provide fast, scalable communication software for real-time operational systems, and we lead the real-time distributed system space. And now we are extending our solution to avionics systems, and by that I mean systems for both manned as well as unmanned aircraft. What we see is that the design of these systems requires a challenging and unique integration of safety-critical components. And those components include processors, operating systems, communication technology, and application software. And what makes design of these systems even harder is the requirement to meet DL178 safety criteria or other similar criteria. In this webinar, what I would like to do is unveil our plans for safety certifiable middleware that can be used as a component in safety critical systems. And as we will see, it comes with certification evidence bundled, so the safety certifiable middleware comes bundled with the certification evidence, so that lowers the development and certification costs and reduces total project risk for developing safety certifiable applications. First, before we start talking about safety certifiability, I want to explain a bit where RTI is coming from. How did we get involved in safety certification? And this was through our work on unmanned aircraft systems. Our software is used in various unmanned aircraft systems today, and we're also leading the platform architecture group of the UAS control segment, the UCS. The UCS is an initiative from the OSD to define a common architecture for unmanned vehicles and ground control systems. To understand that initiative, we must understand that the next generation unmanned aircraft systems are no longer simple a combination of one unmanned aircraft with one ground control station fulfilling a single mission requirement. Instead, we see that this next generation of UAS is a network of self-coordinating vehicles, multiple ground control stations, combined with manned aircraft, satellite systems, ground troops, etc., etc. And all those elements are cooperating to meet multiple and continuously changing mission requirements. And this is the vision at the heart of the net-centric environment. And the challenge that is set out in visionary research papers by both the U.S. DoD and the Air Force is to ensure that data and capabilities of UAVs and ground control stations is accessible to every relevant participant in the environment. Just to give you an example, target data that is obtained by a UAV that is extrapolated from a video stream, for example, may need to be shared with any number of combat systems out there in the field over any one of a number of different communication links and in real time. So what we see in general is that multi-mission, net-centric unmanned aircraft systems of tomorrow will demand far more bandwidth as more data acquisition and data processing components get integrated. And this is true not only for the air-to-ground link, but also for the networks and buses on board the airframe, for the high-speed interconnects that we have in the ground control station, and for the connection back to the tactical backbone. So with this vision for UAS, point-to-point connections are obsolete. And what is needed instead is a networked systems of systems architecture and infrastructure where any endpoint in the system is able to connect to any other endpoint, whether they're on the same network or not. So the challenge then becomes how to design an unmanned aircraft system around a communication platform that spans the entire UAS, so including the airframe, the air-to-ground link, and the ground control station, a communication platform that at the same time can be easily adapted to the continuously evolving environment. So next I want to talk about this communication platform a little bit more, because that really will be the focus of this webinar. So what are the basic capabilities needed for such a common communication platform? Well, first of all, it needs to be standards-based. That's pretty much a no-brainer, because how else are we going to achieve commonality and interoperability between systems? It must also be a peer-to-peer architecture, a peer-to-peer platform. There can be no single point of failure or performance bottleneck. We cannot have a central server in the battlefield, basically. The platform must also work across all link and networking technologies. This includes RF or later optical links between the UAV and the ground control station. It must work equally across high-speed interconnects, such as 10 gig Ethernet, for example. And similarly, the platform must work across heterogeneous computer platforms. You can think of desktop-like systems in the ground control station. Think of embedded platforms, deeply embedded platforms on board the UAV that run real-time operating systems such as VxWorks, Integrity, or LynxOS, or run in time and space partitioned platforms like ARINC 653 compliant platforms. And finally, this communication platform, of course, must be a certifiable component. With the integration in civil airspace, we see that safety certification is becoming more and more a requirement also for military systems. So with the exception of safety certification, a communication platform that meets the baseline capabilities that we just discussed already exists today. And that's the Data Distribution Service, or DDS standard, from the OMG. And in case you're not familiar with OMG, it's the Object Management Group, and that's the same standards organization that created and manages specifications like UML and CORBA, for example. And DDS is also a standard published by OMG. And if you're not familiar with DDS, I will now provide a quick introduction to the basic concepts. And in case you are familiar, please consider this a quick refresher. I won't linger too long on DDS because we want to quickly get to safety certification, which is the main topic of this webinar. And, as I said, is also the one requirement not currently addressed by DDS. So just to give you a quick historical perspective, work on DDS started back in 2001 by RTI, and various system integrators were involved. The first version of the standard was formally adopted by OMG in December of 2004, and the first commercial DDS implementations, was made available in 2005 by RTI, and we have been the leading DDS vendor since. So just to give you a quick introduction, at the very core, DDS provides a plug-and-play data bus, or messaging bus, if you will. This data bus provides a connectionless architecture. And by being a connectionless architecture, it overcomes the problems like the brittleness and lack of scalability that you get from point-to-point integration. So how does this connectionless architecture work? Applications are characterized as publishers or providers of data and subscribers or consumers of data. There's no hard-coded interaction between applications. All communication, all interaction occurs through the common data bus. So for example, on this slide, we have a sensor publishing sensor data on the left side. And then we have a control application that subscribes to the sensor data. This control application controls an actuator that you see on the right side of the slide. So the control application subscribes to sensor data, and it will then automatically start receiving updates from the sensor. And based on the received sensor data, the control application then produces commands for the actuator. And there's no hard-coded knowledge in the applications about each other. So the data bus, the DDS data bus, automatically discovers and connects applications at runtime. And this gives the plug-and-play capability that I mentioned earlier. So in this example, no changes are required to existing applications when you add a new sensor. And in the same way, when you add a new display application, the display application will automatically start receiving sensor data from the sensor and status data from the actuator, for example, so that an operator can view that data. All the display application needs to do is connect to the data bus, and no changes to the sensor and actuator are required to integrate the new display application. So another way to look at this is that connectivity now is a runtime service rather than something that is hard-coded at design time. So at its very core, DDS provides a plug-and-play data bus. But DDS is much more than that. Like a relational database, DDS lets you define your data schemas. So an example shown here on this slide is a common track database, which is shared between the various sensors, subsystems, and systems. And this common data schema enables integration of those subsystems and systems. It makes all system components agree on a common vocabulary, basically, which is the data schema. And during deployment, the data schema then gets populated with actual data. For example, the sensors will insert and update reported tracks. And the data bus then maintains the distributed system state. And any component that is aware of the data schema can connect at any time and then receive the latest system state. And the data bus then provides fast local access to the latest state by pushing updates proactively onto the bus. And this fast local access to data enables real-time applications. So, for example, you can add a real-time threat assessment and weapon assignment component that will then subscribe to the data and get the latest state and updates to that state sent automatically. DDS is being used in hundreds of systems today across many industries, and this includes defense. And as I mentioned earlier, defense is the industry that actually first adopted the DDS standard and was actually behind its original development. Since then, DDS is used in many other industries for a wide range of applications. And this includes, and on this slide you can see a couple of examples. It includes medical systems, transportation systems, tracking systems, manufacturing, telescopes, trading systems, et cetera, et cetera. And if you look at these systems, if you consider these types of systems, you will notice that they all are physical asset-intensive systems. They basically form the infrastructure for the world around us. And Gartner also refers to these systems as operational technology, or OT systems. This is to contrast those types of systems with traditional information technology, or IT systems. And operational technology, or OT systems, have a couple of important characteristics in common. So, for example, OT systems tend to generate and often consume huge amounts of data, like sensory data. And accurate transmission and retrieval of that data is of paramount importance. Without this, these systems don't function correctly. And the implications of failure are usually severe for these types of systems. Failure can lead to loss of property or even loss of life. And for this reason, reliability and safety is often very important for these types of systems. As applications of DDS expand in the operational technology or OT space, for example, to the tactical edge, to sensor grids, to embedded control devices, as this happens, we run more and more into resource-challenged environments. An unmanned aerial vehicle is an example of that. That type of system has very strict size, weight, and power requirements. But you can also think of industrial automation as an example. In industrial automation, many types of devices are used that provide or need data. You can think of PLCs, barcode readers, all kinds of measuring devices. And in these systems and devices, we see that you often have a very limited main memory. So think of 8 megabytes of RAM, just as an example, and compare that to what you have in your desktop system today, or in your laptop, or on your iPhone even. These systems also have very limited secondary storage. So secondary storage can be a flash drive. They have and use embedded low-power CPUs to save power. And we also see, on top of those CPUs and on top of those platforms, we see the use of specialized embedded operating systems like VxWorks or MicroCOS or FreeRTOS, etc. Or sometimes there's not even an operating system present on these devices. The application basically runs on the hardware directly, maybe with the use of some support libraries, but there is no operating system that takes care of scheduling tasks and things like that. And in addition, and that's the main topic of this webinar, we see that primarily in avionic systems, medical devices, transportation systems, there is an increasing requirement for safety certification of the software. Examples of often used guidelines that must be complied to are DO-178 for avionics software and IEC 61508 for medical systems. So besides the need for small memory footprint and low power consumption, we also want to keep the number of lines of source code to a minimum of these applications, because as we will see in a minute, the cost of certification linearly depends on the size of your source code. So as I said, the primary guideline for avionics software is DO-178. It's a guideline, so it's not a standard or a directive, and it's used by the FAA as a basis for safety certification. It's important to understand that only whole systems are certified. So what gets certified in the end is an aircraft, for example. And components like software that's run on board an aircraft can be certifiable. That means that the software comes with certification evidence, like tests and all the documentation, that can then be used during the actual certification process of the entire system. The latest revision of DO-178 is DO-178C. It's been available since January this year, and it was approved just before that in November last year. It replaces the previous version, which is DO-178B, and version C basically brings DO-178 up to date with the latest software development practices, tools, and the latest technologies. DO-178C, in addition, also uses more precise language and terminology in many places, though not all. It also improves the consistency of the guidelines, and it has more objectives, specifically for levels A, B, and C. So, for example, at level A, we had 66 objectives in DO-178B, and now we're up to 71 in DO-178C. More about levels of certification in a minute. Traditionally, DO-178 is applied in civil avionics, as required by the FAA, as I said earlier. But what we see now is an increasing use of DO-178 in military aircraft as well. And in particular, we see this for unmanned aircraft systems that fly in civil airspace. So this affects the airframe as well as the ground control station, though not necessarily at the same level of certification. So speaking of certification levels, if you're already familiar with DO-178, you know that there are five levels. These are called design assurance levels. And the levels correspond to failure conditions, which are characterized by the effect on the aircraft, the crew, and the passengers. The highest level is level A. A failure is, at that level, a failure is catastrophic and may cause a crash of the aircraft. Down to level B, a failure represents a hazard. It may reduce the ability of the crew to operate the aircraft, and it may cause serious or even fatal injuries. And in this way, we go all the way down to level E, where failure has no effect on the operation of the aircraft or the people at all. And in this webinar, we will be talking about the higher levels, A and B. Those obviously are the more challenging ones. So since you're attending this webinar, you're probably aware that certification is not cheap. At level A, the cost of certification is between $50 and $100 per executable line of code. It's expensive because evaluation is simply a lot of work. All objectives must be met. So at level A, that's 71 objectives. At level B, 69 objectives. All steps must be documented. The code must be developed with extra attention, It must be testable. There can be no dead code in your code. The code must be deterministic. You need to develop all tests to give full coverage of the code. You need to run those tests. And based on the results of the tests, you then need to go back and make modifications to the code such that in the end all tests pass. And this actually reminds me of an interesting story, something that happened to me personally. This was in the early days of my career. I had just started as a research engineer, and my work was to see how formal methods could help improve quality of our software. And this was way before I started here at RTI. And as part of our study, we had modeled the requirements of a system that was actually being developed. We had built formal mathematical models and then ran various types of analysis on those models. And we found dozens of issues in the requirement specification, mostly related to missing or overlapping cases. And this intrigued us because we asked ourselves the question, would these issues also exist in the actual code being developed? So what we did is we went and talked to some of the actual developers. And it turned out that many of the issues actually went uncovered and were also present in the code. So as a bunch of young kids back then, we felt really good about ourselves, and we felt that we were a great help. And on one of the next days, the engineering manager comes to talk to me, and I thought, well, you know, here it goes, my first promotion. How wrong I was. Instead, the manager asked me to immediately stop my work. Now his team had to go and fix all these issues that we had uncovered, leading to a delay of the project and extra cost. And his point was that most of these issues would never have occurred in reality. So it was just extra cost. Well, that certainly was an interesting perspective, and obviously we were not building an aircraft or anything similar to that. The bottom line is that there is a significant cost involved in building safety-certified systems, and we must become very efficient without compromising quality. So going back to DL178, there are three primary levels of testing. There's statement coverage, which is required at level C, and it means that every statement in the program is invoked at least once in testing. And this is the most common use of the term code coverage. Next level up, we get decision coverage, DC, at level B. It means that every point of entry and exit in the program is invoked at least once. And it means that each decision, think an if statement or a loop, is taken with all possible valuations. It basically means that every Boolean statement is tested both true and false. And then at level A, we get modified condition decision coverage, or MCDC. It's the same as before, and then we add that each condition in the decision is tested to independently affect the decision's outcome. So for example, take a condition A or B. If A always evaluates to true, then B never contributes to the decision. It basically becomes similar to dead code in your program, which of course cannot have been the intent. So this objective means that complex Boolean expressions need to have associated truth tables to verify each variable. Of course, performing code coverage testing can be done manually, but more efficiently it's done using available code coverage tools. Since software certification is not cheap, we must pay special attention when we are developing the software. Since cost of certification is linearly proportional to the number of lines of code, we must minimize the lines of code we write. Also, when designing certifiable software, we need to keep in mind that every line must be tested. Every component must be either well documented or self-explaining. You must make the state of each component controllable to a level needed by testing. You must also make the intermediate and final results observable, for example, by logging messages. And you must design the components such that they can be tested in isolation. And during system composition, you must consistently apply separation of concerns such that each component has a well-defined functionality. Especially the code must be designed to be deterministic. It means that the code always yields the same behavior. So given an input, it always produces the same output and has no unintended side effects. This also includes temporal behavior, very important for real-time systems. Components must be predictable. It means that the result must have the same level of delay every time, not that you need to wait 2 seconds for a result one time and then half a minute next time because something's happening in the background. One potential source of non-determinism can be dynamic memory allocation. First of all, you can run out of memory at some point, which is certainly an issue. But dynamic memory allocation can also lead to memory fragmentation, and then memory compaction is required, which is a sort of time non-determinism. If you dynamically allocate memory, you likely also need to free up memory at some point, and then garbage collection can also be a source of non-determinism. So I'm not saying that these cannot be solved, but you need to be aware of all these potential issues when designing for safety certification. So with that in mind, let's take a look at communication middleware again. Communication middleware implementations today offer many features, and these can be easily hundreds of thousands of lines of code, and they're not designed for testability as required for certification. But just a line count, multiply it by $50 to $100, makes certification of commercial middleware today economically not viable. So what we want is a middleware implementation specifically designed for safety certifiable systems. It would have fewer capabilities and as a result would have a reduced line count. The middleware should also have predictable behavior, so no sources of non-determinism. That means no dynamic memory allocation. Particularly for middleware, this can be challenging since the application's dimensions are unknown at design time of the middleware. So it means that we require that systems are pre-configured in their components. It doesn't mean that the middleware itself is pre-configured, but the system will not dynamically introduce new components that were not known a priori. And in avionics systems, this is actually what you want, and we'll talk more about system configuration in a minute. You also want to set limits to the size of the system, since this directly affects the size and complexity of data structures and algorithms used. RDDS implementation, for example, can scale to many, many hosts and devices on the network, tens of thousands of nodes, millions of data elements. This is not the size needed on board an aircraft. Instead, we want a middleware implementation that fits the size of modern avionics systems, but no more. Integration then with larger, usually offboard systems, can be done through a bridge. So in software certification, size matters. And how can we reduce the size and complexity of middleware? And I'm talking about the actual source code here. So one key component is the use of data structures. Data structures should be optimized for the particular application domain. Avionics systems, as I already mentioned, have limited scale, limited network size compared to large-scale enterprise systems. And as a result, the data structures in middleware that represent connectivity state can be different. For example, the data structure and search and insertion algorithm for systems of hundreds of thousands of nodes is different from algorithms for hundreds of nodes. For hundreds of nodes, you can use a simple tree search or maybe even a linear search in real small cases. We also want to carefully balance middleware capability versus source code size. The more capabilities, the larger the code size, obviously, and particularly DDS is very feature-rich, which is a good thing in general, but when it comes down to certification, you want to carefully weigh this against the cost of certification. So we want to select the feature set required by most avionics and other safety-critical systems. An example in DDS can be partitions, if you're familiar with DDS. Partitions allow you to create new logical network partitions at runtime. This is very dynamic and therefore harder to certify systems that are using it. Avionics systems will not typically need this type of capability. So here at RTI, We've been working on a safety certifiable implementation of DDS. I'll talk in a minute about the status and where we will be. The implementation we have is a very scalable implementation. It means it can be scaled down to constrained environments. So memory requirements are low. The implementation is fully embeddable in an application. There's no separate executable. And also the CPU load is kept to an absolute minimum in this implementation. And of course, and that's the main point here, the implementation is designed for a safety certification. It has a minimal line count. We are just under 20,000 executable lines of code. And with our design, we are targeting DL178C Level A certification. The implementation of the middleware is based on the OMG DDS standard, and it complies with the RTPS wire protocol. And if you're not familiar with DDS, RTPS stands for Real-Time Publish Subscribe, and it's the standard for the on-the-wire protocol for DDS. It means that the safety certifiable implementation interacts with other DDS implementations. For example, our own general purpose DDS implementation. The safety certifiable version implements a subset of the full DDS API. It has to, in order to minimize the lines of code and minimize the cost of certification. And it actually implements a subset of the DDS minimum profile. And I will explain what that subset is in a minute. Before we started working on our current implementation, we actually built a prototype. This was government-funded research. And we took the experience that we gained building that prototype and are now applying it to the implementation of our safety-certifiable DDS. The goals of the prototype were similar, and they're listed here. Small line count. The prototype has 21,000 lines of code, and it also has a small memory footprint. And part of the research was to have safety certification experts Verocell do an assessment of the prototype code that we developed. And they found that the code is deterministic. There's no memory allocation at runtime. All memory allocation is done upfront during system initialization. And Verocell also found that the code is testable. It conforms to the guidelines that enable testing, like log messages, state controllability, everything that we discussed earlier. And we are now taking the experience that we gained during the prototype, and we're now applying it to a communication middleware implementation that can be used as a middleware component in systems that require safety certification. We call the product Connext Micro. It's a member of our Connext family of products. There's one very important lesson we learned from the prototype. Everyone quickly agrees that size should be minimized to minimize the line count, and everyone agrees the set of capabilities should be minimal. But what is this set of minimal capabilities? This is where we have seen variations. And the solution that we came up with is to offer a very flexible architecture with user-configurable feature set. The architecture has three high-level components. There is the baseline configuration. It contains the absolute minimum set of middleware capabilities required, and it allows you to set up publications and subscriptions, allows you to write and read data, and that's pretty much it. The baseline configuration can then be extended using two mechanisms. One is using plugin components, shown at the bottom here, and the other one is using compile time options, shown on the left side. The plugin components at the bottom, the application can there decide to use one or sometimes more of these. Typically, you'll need at least one of each type of plugin component. And there are four types: transport plugins, operating system plugins, queue management plugins, and discovery plugins. These options, basically, the compile time options that we see on the left allow additional capabilities to be added beyond the baseline configuration. These options are added at compile time by switching compile time flags. So it's comparable to the Linux kernel, where you can add modules by rebuilding the kernel. A listener is an example of a DDS capability that is a compile time option. So the baseline only supports polling for new data. This is the bare minimum. And then listeners add asynchronous notification, so the application is notified when the data is received. Applications can then just read that data. If an application performs cyclic processing, where it first reads the current input values, performs processing on these values, and then writes the output, and it does this at a fixed frequency, say 10 hertz, then no notification is needed. So you can then save the resources by not including that capability. And also quality of service can be compile time options. For example, does an application require reliable communication or just best effort communication? So this flexibility is nice, but when it comes to safety certification, we need to decide what's included in certification evidence and what isn't. And I next want to discuss, based on our experience so far, what we recommend as the capability list for a certifiable DDS. And this slide lists the core capabilities we propose for a certifiable DDS. It requires some basic knowledge of DDS, at least of the DDS object model, so bear with me as we step through this. But most of it should be fairly straightforward. The certifiable DDS would support multiple domains so that network can be partitioned. That's very important, particularly for mixed criticality applications. With certifiable DDS, applications can create all the basic objects or entities. It starts with domain participant, which is the entry point to a DDS network, so an application will be able to create and delete those. The domain participant is then the factory to create topics, which then allows applications to publish and subscribe to. Both keyed and keyless topics are included. And once an application is subscribed to a topic, it can, of course, pull for data. Not all processes are periodic, though. Many processes in avionics and UAVs respond to aperiodic or sporadic events, so we include listeners or notification as well, and applications can then read or take data, obviously. If a data is publishing to a topic, then, of course, it can write data to that topic. It can also dispose stale data, and publishers can also maintain their liveliness, which is based on a heart-beating mechanism to announce periodic availability of applications. And, of course, the whole code is designed to be thread-safe. So these are the capabilities that enable an application to set up publications and subscriptions and to write and read data. So as the middleware creates domain participants, publications and subscriptions, and the middleware sends and receives data, it's critically important how memory is managed. And as we discussed earlier, dynamic memory allocation is a source of non-determinism. In general, application memory sizes can change. There are two types of stores internal to the middleware to be aware of. There's the data cache, which keeps most recent values received for all data, and there's the discovery data, which keeps metadata about all nodes in the network. Now, the data cache grows as more data is produced, and as there are more objects in the environment to be tracked, for example, and the discovery database grows when more hosts and devices join. For safety-certifiable systems, it's critically important that memory usage is deterministic. So the middleware requires that all resource limits are configured before creating entities, and in this way, memory is only allocated during the create calls, which are performed during system setup and initialization. And then after the system has been set up and configured, there is no more memory growth. Resource configuration of each entity is done through quality of service or QoS settings, and there's more QoS than the ones for resource configuration. This slide shows an overview of the major QoS available in a certifiable DDS implementation. A major one is communication protocol. So a certifiable DDS would support both best effort and reliable communication. You may think, of course, for system certification, we will need reliable communication. Well, this actually depends on your application and your design. Sometimes safety and reliability can be at odds. As an example, in our research, we came across a particular system design that does not include reliable communication at all. Data is simply sent over UDP, and all processes are set up as periodic processes. Each process, when scheduled for execution, first reads the current input data, performs the required processing on the data, and then sends the computed output values. It uses a real-time scheduler, and all processes are executed at a high frequency, say 30 hertz, With this type of design, the reliability protocol really doesn't make sense. By the time a missing packet is detected and a repair packet is sent, the next value is already available to be sent. So in this case, the reliability protocol can be a source of non-determinism because of the high-frequency repair traffic that can interfere with the regular traffic data. So other QoS that are that we propose are supported in a certifiable DDS include durability, which is a service for late joiners, and also publication and subscription deadline, and ownership and strength. The latter combination is used to implement redundancy, also very important for safety-critical systems, obviously. I also want to talk about DDS discovery for a minute and how this particular process is set up is important for safety-critical systems. So DDS discovery is a process by which applications find out about each other's existence. Discovery happens automatically behind the scenes. This is why it's called anonymous publish and subscribe. Applications continuously refresh their presence or are aged out of the network. And there are two stages to discovery. The first is participant discovery. Participants periodically announce their presence using data messages. And then an initial announcement is sent to all hosts on the initial peer list. And then refresh messages are sent periodically to all discovered applications. So upon startup, an application will send an announcement called hello on this slide. And this announcement is sent to all hosts and devices on the initial peer list. In this example, we have just two peers, peer one and peer two. So if a device is up, like peer one, it sends an acknowledgement back. If it's down, of course, there's no response. So now application knows that peer one is up and peer two isn't. Then follows the second stage of discovery. In this second stage, peers exchange information about their endpoints. And by endpoints, I mean publication and subscriptions, and which topics these publications and subscriptions are to. So in the second phase of discovery, the application sends out a message which is, with its publications and subscriptions, and it then sends this message to each discovered peer. So in this example, that's just peer one. Peer one then responds by sending its publications and subscriptions in return. This is initial discovery, and the middleware matches up local and remote publish and subscriptions to establish the communication path. So I hope this gives a high-level understanding of how discovery in DDS works. Now, let's put this in the context of safety-critical systems. And, of course, in a safety-critical system, you don't want an unknown of a number of applications to connect. Imagine that you're on an airplane, you open up your laptop, and you see a message saying, new device discovered, Boeing 787, initialize yes or no. That's not the type of dynamic connectivity you want for some applications. So also, you don't want applications to dynamically create publications and subscriptions without any level of control. Avionics systems are simply not this dynamic, and for a good reason. So what we see in avionics system is that components all have well-defined interfaces, and for each subsystem or system component, we know what the interfaces are. We know what the data is that will be published and what the data is that they will subscribe to. So a component by itself may be either up or down, particularly during system initialization phase. So really all we need to know is which applications are up, and we want to use a simple protocol. And this simple protocol we call quasi-static discovery. It works as full dynamic discovery. It consists of two phases. The first phase is the same, but the second phase is completely different. In the second phase, rather than discovering publications and subscriptions over the network, it loads the configuration from a file. So the end result is that you will only have predefined components on the network. So we looked at the core capabilities available in certifiable DDS. What I want to list next quickly, in case you're familiar with DDS, is point out the capabilities that would not be present in a certifiable DDS. Most of these functions, I would say, are convenience functions, so they can be easily resolved by adopting basically a slightly different style of programming. And as you may know, DDS has three different profiles: the minimum profile, content subscription, and object model. And what we propose for a safety certifiable DDS is a subset of the minimum profile, and this slide lists the features that would not be supported by a certifiable DDS. Also, certain QoS would not be supported, mostly related to dynamic memory management. So we have carefully looked at the different QoS available, and we have listed those that could result in unwanted dynamic behavior, and those are the ones listed on this slide. So these ones would not be included in a certifiable DDS. And that's, of course, a very important part. We're also working on all certification evidence, which can be used for system certification. This certification evidence, it's sometimes called a cert pack, comes on a DVD, and it has all required documents. It includes the high and low level requirements. It includes architectural design description and full traceability of the requirements. It also has all the tests and the test results. And right now, we are working on the high-level and low-level requirements, and we're working on development of the actual code. And around end of August, we plan to have the code ready. And after this, we'll start effort on producing the actual certification evidence. Many safety-critical systems require communication middleware, and by developing the certification evidence once, we get the benefit of reusing that same evidence across many different applications. And this can be a significant cost saver. The alternative is that evidence is developed on project-specific basis, which would obviously lead to a lot of duplication of effort and cost. So this brings me to the conclusion of the webinar. We talked about safety-certifiable implementations of communication middleware. Particularly, we looked at the DDS standard. Our safety-certifiable middleware implementation is Connext Micro. It's a family of our Connext product family, and it's under active development today. It's standard compliant. It implements a subset of the DDS minimum profile, and it's designed for applications with low memory requirements. It's also being designed for safety certification. It has around 20,000 lines of code, which is just a fraction of current full DDS implementations. It's also designed for deterministic behavior, and it follows the guidelines for DL1C78 certification up to level A. As I said, we're not just working on the implementation, we're also working on the actual certification evidence. The advantage is that this certification evidence is reusable across many different applications, so it avoids duplication of development effort and cost. So hopefully I was able to raise your interest in safety certifiable communication middleware. If you want to know more, there are a couple of next steps. We have an early access release available. We actually just updated that early access release. So if you want to go further than an evaluation, that's a possibility too. There are two possible paths you can take. You can start with the current early access release and migrate to the official public release later, or you can start with our general purpose product and stick to the API subset defined for safety certification. If you're less familiar with DDS, then you may want to evaluate DDS in general first. Then before looking at safety certification, I would recommend you look at this general purpose implementation of DDS that we have available. We have a free download evaluation available from our website. So simply go to this link on our website and you get access to all DDS documentation, our implementation, and all the tools and services included. So with that, I want to thank you for your attention. Back to you, Mike. I apologize for running a bit over time, and hopefully we'll have some time left for questions.
Thanks, Edwin. We'll get right to the questions now then. First question we have is, are there any restrictions on data types in certifiable DDS?
No, not really. All standard OMG types can be supported. I think the only exception are a couple of extensions, like pointers, for example. So our latest early access release still has some limitations when it comes to arrays and sequences of certain types. But by the time of the official release, we expect to support all standard types, also including arrays, sequences, and unions of basic types.
Okay, thank you. Next question is, do you know of any reason why an Agile team using Scrum and XP would not be able to get their aerospace app certified?
Well, I think the most important part there is traceability. So we sometimes for some applications we also use an agile approach, and that's mostly for tools that we typically don't take through certification. So I think an agile team is fine to develop the code. You must document the high-level and low-level requirements because, in the end, traceability is required. So you can't have just a prototyping effort with user feedback, which you would typically follow for tools development, for example. You do need to have your requirements developed. But I say that an agile approach could definitely work for the initial development. But then at some point, you will have to decide, yes, this is the functionality that we need. And at that point, you freeze the requirements, you freeze the code, and you work on the certification evidence. So that would work. What wouldn't work is to develop the certification evidence itself during the agile phase of the project. I simply would think that the cost of that is too high, because continuously making changes to the certification evidence is costly. But if you split it into those two phases, so first get the functionality right through an agile approach and then focus on the certification evidence, I think that may actually work.
Okay. Next question, I think we have two related questions. What programming languages will a certifiable DDS support?
So our implementation is in C, and for this type of software, and by that I mean communication middleware, this is the most efficient language, both from a performance point of view as well as a certification effort point of view. So C is the native programming interface. Then on top of C, we plan to layer a C++ interface. For application programming, there are many advantages in using C++. Specifically, the use of template programming can significantly reduce the number of lines of code. What we see is that application code written in C++ is generally 40% smaller. But we need to be careful here, since the cost of certifying C++ code is generally higher than C code. You have to write many more lines of tests for classes and instantiations in C++. So you have to carefully outweigh the benefits of C++ against the cost of certification, which for C++ is higher per line of code. I think using C++ in general up to DL 178 level B, you should be fine. So to answer the question, we have plans to support both C and C++ as of this moment.
Okay, thank you. Next question is, I didn't see weight sets mentioned on any of your slides. Can those be implemented in a certifiable DDS?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question and often asked. The short answer is yes. We actually plan to implement weight sets. And I realize that many people attending may not know what weight sets are, and it's a pretty fundamental concept in DDS, so let me try and explain it quickly. So in DDS, there are three modes for reading updates, and two we've already talked about earlier. These are polling for data, when you simply read the currently available value, for example, periodically. And then there are listeners, which are callback functions. And whenever an update is received, the application gets notified by invoking the callback function. The one thing to be aware of here is that the application code is then executed within the context of the middleware's receive thread. And this mode is ideal for short computations, so generally any code that does not block and does not call into the kernel. Then the third mode is wait sets. And this is what the question is about. So using weight sets, an application calls a blocking read operation, so to speak. The application thread is then blocked until an update arrives or until some other specified events happen. If either occurs, let's say new data arrives, the application thread is then woken up and resumes execution. So the big difference compared to listeners is that the advantage of wait sets is that it does not involve any code executed in the middleware thread. So it's non-intrusive and better for pieces of code that take longer to execute and potentially block. So as I explained that, you see that there are use cases also in avionic systems for all three modes. So yes, wait sets will be supported in a certifiable DDS is our observation. You would require all three modes, including wait sets.
Okay, one more question, and then we'll be wrapping it up. What tools are you using to create the certification evidence?
So we actually work with our partner, Verocell. So we are using their tools. We use a tool for requirement traceability. That's Verocell's VeroTrace. And we also use their tools for coverage analysis. This includes the MCDC, remember, the Modified Condition Decision Coverage objective required for level A that I explained earlier. Remember that this is where you need to develop truth tables for every Boolean expression in your program. So this is where we use coverage analysis tools. And then we use a tool for performing static and dynamic worst case stack depth evaluation to make sure that the usage of the stack is bounded. There are other tools provided by other vendors for safety certification as well. So there's certainly no need to develop your own tools these days. And on our project today, we are using Verocell's tool suite.
Thanks, Edwin. That's great. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we'll need to wrap up today's webinar. We have more questions that have come in, and as we said earlier, somebody will get back to you after the webcast. So thanks again to our presenter, Dr. Edwin DeYoung, and to RTI for providing us with this very informative webinar. I remind you that the webcast will be posted online at the URL shown that should be available later on today. Note that an audio-only podcast version will also be available. And to get that, you can go to iTunes and search for embedded_ecast. And there you'll find all of Open Systems Media's ecasts that are available for download as MP3s. Thank you to everybody for attending and for your great questions, and have a great day.